Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two films with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of the Neverending Story versus The Princess Bride. On Monday, it was an emotional show as we relived Artek sinking into the swamp of sadness as Atreyu looks on in the Neverending Story. And on today's episode, we're in the safe hands of TV's greatest ever detective, Lieutenant Columbo, in his secret identity as the actor Peter Falk. He's got another story to tell, full of evil princes, magic and daring do, but it is also a kissing book. From 1987, we're talking about The Princess Bride. So which movie will emerge victorious at the end of this show and be crowned the better film? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Potters. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Chris Tilley.
And as you just heard, it's part two of The Neverending Story versus The Princess Bride. These were my choices, so I'll remind you of the connection. Old men, kids and books in the 80s. It wasn't really that. It was which movie from a fantasy novel does it matter? Chris took us on a wonderful journey through The Neverending Story on Monday. Victoria, you had The Princess Bride. Do you want to take us away?
Sure. The Princess Bride, think of it as a live-action Shrek before there was Shrek, a postmodern structure-busting swashbuckler where lovely Robin Wright falls in love with the dashing Cary Elwes before losing him to death at the hands of the dread pirate Roberts, or so she thinks. Then 5 years later, kidnapped on the eve of her wedding to Prince Humperdinck, Buttercup is briefly reunited with her true love Wesley after he battles the revenge-seeking Inigo Montoya, Big Man Fezzik, and cunning Vicini before he himself is captured by her would-be bridegroom. It's then down to Inigo and Fezzik to rescue the dead Wesley from the pit of despair and stop the wedding before the wedding happens. That do?
That's good. I mean, I would stress that Wesley is mostly dead. And also, just while we're here, the three of us, you know, just shooting the breeze, are we going to decide on how we're pronouncing Carrie's last name? I thought it was Yules.
I've got Elwes. But I mean,
I don't think it's Elwes.
Okay.
Chris?
I've never thought it wasn't Elwes.
Really?
I'm with Vicky, yeah.
Oh, thanks, Beau. It's difficult. I mean, I'm happy to say it, however. When I was younger, I thought it was Ewells, and then...
Ewells.
Did no one
check this? Why did none of us check this? Because we're going to be talking...
Because it's Elwes.
I've never questioned it. Yeah, I've never questioned it. I've met the man.
Okay. And did you say, nice to meet...
Yeah, in 10 years' time, I'll be doing a podcast... And how do I pronounce your name on that podcast?
Does Vicky pronounce it?
The L's before the W, so it's got to be Elwes.
Okay.
That's what I think, yeah.
All right.
He can get in touch. Yeah. I'm sure he's listening. Pissed off that we can't get it right. So
no, I've checked. I've checked. Well, you are right, Victoria. I apologise. It's me. You know, when you get stuck saying something from a child to an adult and you've never had to question it, I've always gone, ools, which is wrong. You are right. It's Elwes.
So apology to the listeners for the last 2 minutes of this podcast.
Yeah. And apologies to me again. So... No problem. Right, sorry. With your permission, I will get back on track.
All right. Jeez.
The war of the land gave Humperdinck the right to choose his bride.
The fabric will make the prince suspect the Gildarians have abducted his love.
I never say anything about killing anyone.
I just happened to look behind us and something is there.
He's obviously seen us with the princess and let's therefore die. Pick up one of those rocks. Get behind the boulder. The minute his head is in view, hit it with the rock!
I was not a sportsman, Nick.
I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder. I'm swapped.
Jesus, Grandpa, what did you read me this thing for?
Well, who says life is fair?
Where is that written?
Fencing, fighting, chases, escapes, giants, monsters, torture, revenge, true love, miracles.
So this is the second time I've seen this film. I don't know if that surprises you. So rewatching it for the podcast, I'm essentially, that's not right. I was going to say essentially watching it as an adult, but I am an adult. So I was actually watching it as an adult. What about you two?
But did that whole bit end with going, I was actually watching it as an adult? Because obviously you were.
Is that not the gold you've come to expect from me in this section?
Well, I think what's happened is since that email came in saying that you were the best thing on the podcast.
No, it said she was Dennis Rodman. It said she was Dennis Rodman. Big difference.
I realised, I don't need
to try as
hard.
The pressure's got to you.
It hasn't been, actually.
Yeah.
I know, the only way is down. Fucking hell.
Yeah. But you watched it as an adult, which is good to know. I'm glad
I watched it as an adult, as an adult called Vicky, in my house, actually. Just last week. Yeah, that's my story.
Excellent. Chris?
I watched it on video, I think, when I was about 12. I thought it was sweet, but I don't think it made that much of an impact on me. I think some of the jokes went over my head. And a bit like Fred Savage, I wasn't that interested in the romance. I think I was just more interested in action movies at the time. So, yeah, I enjoyed watching it as an adult.
Okay, well, we're 3 for 3 because I too watched it as an adult. we can confirm we've all watched it as an adult. I think I've watched it a couple of times at about sort of 7-year intervals. So I didn't watch it as a kid, but I watched it when I was still fairly young, really liked it. Then watched it again once, I think, as a student, really liked it. Yeah, I really liked it again. As an adult.
Yeah, because it works on the never-ending story works on quite a dark level on two levels, like for children and for adults. I think if you're an adult with a never-ending story, you get the darkness. But with The Princess Bride, it's more the humour. So a lot of the jokes are geared more towards grown-ups, especially there's a joke about breasts towards the end, which is a bit weird for kids.
Might that be the inappropriate boobs that I mentioned at the start of last episode?
Remind me what this joke is? So I feel like I'm in the dark here, like, you know, under the shadow of some boobs.
Which is a great place to be. Buttercup goes to stab herself through the heart and Wesley sort of surprises her and says, there are too many imperfect breasts in the world. It would be a shame to ruin yours,
right.
I think.
Yeah,
which
I remember
isn't, it's not the breasts that are inappropriate. That's why I didn't pick you up on it, Chris, before. It's not the breasts that are inappropriate. It's the joke itself.
Agreed. No breasts are inappropriate, ever.
That's also correct. Oh, apart from if they're sitting next to you at cinema. Am I right?
It's more the noise. I was happy
feeding
to look at them. I was happy to look at them. It was just the noise.
Oh my God. You are the worst person in the world.
I couldn't hear Ian McKellen because all I could hear was...
Oh, wow.
So would you like to know a little bit the background to this film?
The problem is that sound could be one of two things, and I know how much you like breast, Chris, so I'm just pleased that there was no one else in that cinema to watch.
Oh.
Yes, talk about the film, please, Vicky.
So, as you mentioned on the last episode, you stole one of my facts, but I do appreciate that you probably thought I hadn't done any research, because that's kind of the way I do it, so it's just kind of fair enough.
That's your modus operandi. Just wing it. Wing it and still be the best.
Doesn't it make you sick? Anyway, This is a William Goldman novel, and it was optioned for a very lot of money back in the 70s. So in 1973, it was optioned for $500,000 in 1973, which was a shitload of money. It's a shitload of money now, but it was especially a shitload of money back then. But it didn't work out. The film adaptation at that time didn't work out. So William Goldman bought the rights back with his own money. And then a few years later, you've got Rob Reiner, who says it's his favourite book, and Norman Lear, who Reiner worked for on All in the Family, which I haven't seen, but that's a fact. But Norman Lear had funded Spinal Tap, obviously directed by Rob Reiner, produced The Princess Bride, and then that's how you get Rob Reiner in charge of this film. And go on.
I can't remember which studio it was, but Rob Reiner tells a really funny story about after the success of Spinal Tap, he sat down, it was either Paramount or Universal, he sat down with them, one of the heads of the studio, and they were like, we love you, we love what you've done, what do you want to do next? And he went, you won't like it, you won't like what I want to do next? And they were like, we will, anything, tell us. And he's like, honestly, you are not going to want to make what I want to make next. And they were like, we will want to make it, Rob. And he goes, The Princess Bride. And they go, apart from that.
Well, is it true? Because this is off my most trusted source, Wikipedia. But it was almost Francois Truffaut. So that would have been quite a different film.
Yeah, but John Boorman was attached at one point. Robert Redford was attached at one point, yeah.
Anyway. And then just to talk about casting, let's talk about Cary Elwes for a minute. Apparently they were pretty sure they wanted him, but there's a legendary story about Robin Wright, which I don't think I believe, but I will repeat it anyway. They were looking at British actresses for the part of Buttercup because of the accents. And then Robin Wright turns up at William Goldman's house. They open the door and she's very beautiful, obviously, but she was sort of backlit by the sun. And William Goldman was like, you know, you look backlit by God, like an actual proper princess. And at that point, he was like, you're hired. It's a bit of a daft story, but she's very good in it. So it kind of doesn't matter.
She is really good in it. And it's one of those performances where you go, now, see, you nailed that accent. It's a really good
It's flawless. English accent. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's almost offensive how good it is. Like, she just must be so good because I think we British people, I think we can be quite picky about people, like any gaps when someone's trying to do our accent, we just notice them straight away. I feel like that. And it's you cannot see the joy in at all. I think it's brilliant.
Let's do some other casting rumours. At least one of them is true. I don't know about all of them, but there was a time when Colin Firth might have been Wesley.
Oh,
can't confirm. I've only found that at one source. One that is true is Danny DeVito was going to play Vizzini,
which would have made more sense because of the Sicilian stuff he talks about, to have an Italian,
Italian
American guy playing that role rather than someone who's clearly not Italian. But
yeah, two more: Sting as Humperdinck, Prince Humperdinck. Sting as Prince Humperdinck. What? I'm not sure about that. And Arnold Schwarzenegger as Fezzik, as played by Andre the Giant.
Yeah, they couldn't afford Schwarzenegger. Initially, they wanted him and they could have got him. But by the time the film went into production, he was too big a deal.
Yeah. He would have been. What was it? 1987. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was kicking ass.
Very good. So just to get into the film, you've mentioned Columbo several times, which is only right. So Columbo is reading Kevin from the Wundias a story because he's ill. So this serves as the framing device for the film. And there's not too much to say about that apart from it provides the emotional payoff for the end of the film, which I really, really love. So we'll get to that. So Columbo is reading his grandson a story, and that's where we meet Buttercup and Wesley. Now, she is what? She's like a wealthy landowner, question mark? Because she's not a princess until she's going to get married to a prince. So what is she? She's just rich? Is that it?
It's a great question. One that I haven't considered, Chris.
I don't understand at all. She's hanging around in the stables. I thought they called her Princess Buttercup right from the start. But,
yeah,
so
did I, but yeah. You can't...
I have no idea what is going on with her situation, but I think it's one of those... I think it's one of those films where they decided people aren't going to care. It's not going to matter.
Yeah.
It's about these two people meeting each other. And it doesn't. It's only when I'm sitting down making my notes for the podcast that I start examining this stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because when you're being asked to believe what the actors... Cary Elwes and Robin Wright have to do the like a really good job of saying like this is true love. It's basically love at first sight almost, and you have to believe it, otherwise you don't care what happens, and you don't have much time to establish that. And she's quite rude to him, and he seems to love that. So quite a lot is done in quite a short amount of time. And I suppose
it's suggested that she falls in love with him despite the fact he only ever utters three words to her the entire time, which
that's true.
Is amazing. If you could just hang out with someone and every time they said something, you go, as you wish, and they'd be like, oh, hello. And you'd be like, as you wish. And they're like, stop that, as you wish. And it's like, wow. And you're in love with him? Okay.
Next week on the podcast, Vicky, all you should say is, I'm all in.
I'm all in. I'm going to get it put. Someone get it put on a T-shirt for me, please. I would wear it.
This time when I was...
I mean, you do it yourself, but you're too busy, obviously.
Someone's put it on a... No, someone's put it on a T-shirt and emailed it to us. Have you not seen that?
No, are you being
serious? I'm
not
joking. I'm genuine. Neil Bennett says, new line of merchandise. Good morning. Following your latest podcast featuring the full Monty, I thought I would share my latest idea for merchandise. And it's our Clash of the Titles picture with I'm All In written above it. Thank you, Neil.
That's amazing. That's only topped by how amazing it was that you thought Vicky might have seen one of our emails just then. haven't you seen it? Of course she bloody hasn't.
Have I not mentioned? I'm super busy.
Have you got kids?
Wait, we should maybe in the book, we should talk about like the fact that obviously this is William Goldman adapted his own book into this script. And maybe the fact that what he was doing with this book was just, it started as him writing a book for his daughters, didn't it? And one of them wanted a book about a princess and one of them wanted a book about a bride. And so he started writing The Princess Bride. And so I think at that point, he didn't really need to explain why this princess / bride was working on a farm.
Well, I imagine it's more, it's explained in the book though. I haven't read the book, but I just feel like it's one of those things. They just, I've done my research on the book, which it does sound interesting.
I'm joking. It's fine that you haven't read the book. It's just, I think it's probably the first time you haven't read a book on this show.
I'm really busy. I've got 10 kids. but the book, it's like he's pretending it's an abridged version of a book he loved as a kid. And that his father would read to him, but he realized his father was reading it without all the boring bits. And so he decided to write an abridged version of it inspired by a teacher. And that's all in the introduction. Apparently, all that's completely made up by William Goldman.
It's amazing. I got so lost trying to understand this because I didn't know any of that. I knew that he'd written a book, but this whole fictional author that he created, that he said he was adapting the work of into his own book. It's kind of nuts. He does describe it, though, as the most strongly connected emotional. It's the most strongly connected he's been emotionally to any writing of his entire life.
And we should say, if you don't know William Goldman is, he's one of the great screenwriters. He wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He wrote All the President's Men. And he wrote maybe the greatest book on screenwriting as well, Adventures in the Screen Trade, which I'm sure we've all read that one. So, yeah, and this was him, really, a real departure for him. And I think that's why it has so much fun playing with the form as well. I think it was as much an experiment as sort of a burning passion project.
Yeah, and it could have gone wrong as well. Like, that's what's... This film is, like, very beloved and is, like, rightfully like a cult classic because it's... it's like it's pastiche. It's like playing with genre, playing with form, and it doesn't become too. I mean, it's quite cheeky, but it doesn't get too sort of wink, wink, annoying. Like, and it's it just makes you want to love it. Like, it's just endearing from start to finish, which is quite a thing to pull off.
It's weird, isn't it? I came to it. I think I'd already seen some Mel Brooks movies at this point. I'd certainly seen Spaceballs before I saw The Princess Bride, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of The Princess Bride, because on the one hand, it does feel like it's parodying the fantasy genre, and yet it's not, because it takes the fantastical elements, this fantasy world and the love story, it's not mocking it. It believes in it as its own story, and it sort of inhabits this sort of weird area between parodying something and being a fantasy movie. So I think the first time I saw it, I actually was a bit confused by what it was doing, because I was expecting a kind of swords and sorcery Spaceballs.
I think I had the same reaction, Alex. I really did.
Yeah. I think if you like Monty Python, then you're going to be fine, because the humour reminds me a bit of... especially like when Princess Buttercup, when she falls down the hill with Wesley, like the physical comedy of that. And obviously because there's, you know, the landscape looks familiar, the accents are familiar. It just feels quite cosy, like recognisable from a sort of Monty Python-esque point of view. Do you know what I think?
Yeah, but I feel like they're spoofing a lot more than this one is.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I was confused by lots of things. I was confused as who was prettier, Wesley or Buttercup as well.
Does it matter?
No, I'm just sitting there thinking, which one of these is pretty? Like, they've picked such pretty people to play both of these characters.
Who Something is there for out? Everyone. Who's out of whose league?
They're both a 10, so that's okay.
Yeah, it's you just mentioned one of the best scenes in it, though. I guess we'll come to it in greater detail, but the bit where she throws herself down the hill after him. After she pushes him down the hill and she throws herself after him and goes, "Oh, my sweet Wesley, what have I done?" It's so fucking romantic and ridiculous at the same time. I got goosebumps at that moment, because it's hilarious, the fact that she goes, "Shit, I'll just go after him." And then, like, really over the top comically, just throws herself down this hill. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, whichever way you slice it, watching someone just boing down a hill is always funny.
Yeah.
Before that scene,
Hot Rod. That's the best hill fall. Have you seen Hot Rod when Andy Samberg goes down the hill? That's epic. That's the best hill fall ever. Chris, have you seen that?
I have. Yeah. Oh, good hill fall.
Great.
Cool. Quick. Okay. anyway, back to The Princess Bride. The other scene I wanted to talk about is Wesley disappears to make his fortune. 5 years go by. He's presumed dead. Buttercup is betrothed to Prince Humperdinck, and she is kidnapped on the eve of her wedding. And we eventually get to the famous sword fight on the excellently named, which I can't see Monty Python, Cliffs of Insanity. This is one of my favourite scenes. So Inigo Montoya is a very important character for me in this, and this is where you get the backstory, and it's brilliantly done. It's done very seriously. It's actually quite moving, but the sword fight itself is really well choreographed. Cary Elwes and Mandy Patinkin trained for it properly. Apparently they tried to watch all sword fights that had ever been filmed so they could be brilliant at sword fights, and I think you can tell. But mostly I enjoy the shout outs to being left-handed. As a left-handed person, I don't think we get enough of a positive representation, and it's just nice that it's there as a joke.
Yeah, I think the sword fight was written in the script as the greatest sword fight in history. And so they had to really put the work in. It was actually, it was done by the people who did the stunt choreography on Star Wars, a guy called Peter Diamond and Bob Anderson. And they obviously, you know, if they did the stunt coordination on the original Star Wars trilogy, they probably had a hand in some of the lightsaber fights. So you can see, like, there's a couple of backflips in it that you go, yeah that's cool. Luke Skywalker. Yeah.
When I was at school, there was a lad in my year who was one of the top 50 tennis players. And I played him once and he beat me. It was top 50 in the country. He beat me 6-1. And I was so happy that I'd got a game off him in this set.
That's just week, like you.
For a week, I was so proud of myself until someone pointed out to me that he'd played me left-handed and he wasn't actually left-handed.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which is obviously what happens here. And I was gutted. But also found it quite funny.
For a moment, I thought you were really good at tennis, Chris. For a moment.
I imagine you probably are quite good at tennis.
No, it's one it's one of the few things I'm not good at, but moving on.
One of the few things. Sorry, I wasn't listening. Idiot. One of the few things you're not good at. So eventually, Wesley, so he bests Inigo Montoya. He knocks out Andre the Giant and he catches up with Buttercup, and she's having a blindfolded picnic. Not explained. I understand why she's blindfolded, but it doesn't really make any sense. And he sort of uses his cunning to kill Vizzini with some poisoned mead or wine or something. And then this scene for me is a little bit strange because he knows who she is. She doesn't know who he is. And I think he's trying to have a go at her for getting remarried or attempting to get remarried quite fast after he disappeared. And
not remarried.
Yeah.
Married.
Married. No, she's not married then.
That's what I mean. She's not getting remarried.
Sorry. Yeah, that's true. Sorry. Yes. Getting married for the first time. And he tries to slap her across the face, which is a bit of an odd moment. And he also says to her, she says, I loved the farm boy or whatever. She's like, I have been in love and blah blah blah, and sort of confesses her love for Wesley, who she thinks is dead, to this person, and she doesn't know who he is. And then he says to her, where I come from, there are penalties when a woman lies, which is an uncomfortable, weird line for me.
You'd be in trouble with your kids, wouldn't you, Vicky?
I'd be in trouble. And I did also think you would better be a good shag, otherwise that lady is in trouble.
Yeah, it's a very uncomfortable scene, isn't it?
It's just weird. Why does he try and slap her across the face? Was that all right? I don't know. Anyway.
Was it his way of trying to throw her off the scent of who he is? But it's just horrible and it doesn't work at all.
Yeah. But it doesn't put her off. We have the rolling down the hill scene. She realises who he is. So the lovers are reunited. Lovely, lovely. And then we've got, what's it called? The fire swamp? Swamp of fire? I'm getting my swamps. Fire swamp.
No, you were right the first time. The fire swamp, yeah. With the rodents of unusual size.
Well, I wanted to talk about that because I'd forgotten about the rodents of unusual size. And they're fucking terrifying. Like, I know it's just a person in a suit. It was quite scary. Like, it seems very vicious. And it's really going to bite his fucking nose off.
Did you? You and animals. What is it? You either want them. You want them dead, or they have a vendetta against you. I'm surprised.
Vicky.
Do you know what I've written down? I've written, I wish Wesley didn't have to kill the rodent of unusual size.
I agree.
I have that in my notes.
I agree. I've written down. Sad to see him die. That rodent.
Really? Yeah. Don't lie.
I have, 100%. I said, big fan of the rodent of unusual size, sad to see him die. That is what I have written.
Does it need to happen?
And I put it in italics, which means I need to say this. Vicky, did you watch this one with your kids?
No, I didn't, because they talk constantly and I needed to concentrate. So I watched it.
I did wonder as well, because it gets a bit stabby at the end, which I thought it gets weirdly violent in a way that I wonder if you know, recommending this to young kids would be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they would have made of it. I don't know. I think they would have been scared of the rats, to be fair, like I was, and glad to see that rat dispatched.
No,
wrong.
but the next key moment is that Christopher Guest, who plays Count Rugen, is the six-fingered man that Inigo Montoya is seeking to exact his revenge. The six-fingered man is the person that killed his father. Then there's a weird moment. So they're breaking the structure frequently to check in with Columbo and Kevin from the Wonder Years. And there's sort of a sidebar moment where it seems like Wesley and Buttercup are not going to get married. And Fred Savage says, that's not fair, Grandad. Everything that Wesley did for her, she has to marry him. I thought, hey, little Kevin from the Wonder Years, that's not how it works. It's not a repayment for services rendered.
Is it not?
She doesn't have to do anything, young man. But, you know, he's young.
What's Vicky? Chris, what's Vicky talking about?
I don't know. She's getting on her high horse again, isn't she?
No, just saying, a woman shouldn't marry you because she owes you something, you two. So
what am I paying all this money for then?
You cost, tell me, mate.
It's costing me a fortune.
Oh, so far, Vicky, you've had a go at Fred Savage, and you're happier Rat's dead. Carry on.
Everyone's happier Rat's dead. Don't be ridiculous. No one genuinely likes rats.
I don't like rats, but a rodent of unusual size, I'm much more interested in.
I had a rat called Splinter. Yeah.
Did you?
So, yeah.
Did you? That's really cute.
Thanks. Yeah.
Oh, what happened to Splinter?
The turtles got him.
He died. He was on the same side as the turtles, actually. He just died of old age, and then I got another rat. Guess what I called that one?
Shredder.
Wait.
Roland.
Ratty Ratterson. Roland.
Splinter 2.
Was this last year, Alex?
Yeah. Splinter 2, Rat Harder. Is that what you called it?
Rat harder.
That's disgusting.
I mean, I see what you've done, but I don't think it works, Vicky.
Wait. Rat better. rat bigger. Rat bigger.
What does ratting something and then ratting something harder mean?
I don't know. I don't know. But I'm not a experienced rat handler in the way that you are.
Come on. Back to the Princess Bride.
Sorry.
Come on.
Sorry.
You need to watch the Netflix documentary, Rat King.
Alex Exotic. That would be amazing. You do dress like that, so.
You do dress like that.
I do dress like that.
Cross between that guy and the Strokes.
I have no problem with that.
Where are we up to? So Wesley is in the pit of despair, and he's strapped to an evil torture machine, which makes him cry, which is actually a sad, like a genuinely sad moment. See, those are my emotional buttons. Like most normal people, it's human beings.
You would have hated this sequence. You would have hated this sequence in the book. I believe it was the Zoo of Despair, and it was 5 levels of deadly animals.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Is that right?
Yeah.
What do they do to him? Like, bite him?
I didn't read it, but he has to defeat them. But yeah, no, I agree with you.
No, don't give her any ammunition. What did they do to him? Did they deserve to die? Yeah.
I agree with you. It's a very disturbing scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what each setting takes that number of years off his life. Mm. So if he set it to 10, it takes 10 years off his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really creepy concept.
Yeah. So it kills him, unfortunately, and he needs to be rescued by Inigo Montoya and Fezzik. So they take him to Billy Crystal and Carol Kane. I can't remember what... Oh, Miracle Max, is it? And Valerie. They've got like makeup on them to sort of age them and make them look like goblins or elves. And Billy Crystal is absolutely brilliant. And I wish... And Carol Kane is good as well, but she doesn't get as much screen time as Billy Crystal does. And I could have stayed with them all day just listening to their nonsense. It's very, very funny.
When he says, get back, witch. And she says, I'm not a witch, I'm your wife. That made me laugh the most of anything in the film. Her delivery of that line is so funny.
It's the bit where Andre the Giant and Inigo are at the door and Billy Crystal goes, beat it or we'll call the Brute Squad. And Andre the Giant goes, I'm on the Brute Squad. Billy Crystal goes, you are the Brute Squad. Love that joke.
The best line, because it sounds improvised, is when they bring Wesley mostly back to life and they say, oh no, they give the pill, don't they, to Inigo Montoya and Fezzik and say, you know, you need to wait 15 minutes and blah, blah, blah. And don't go swimming for at least an hour. That's so funny. It's not the don't go swimming, it's the for at least an hour. Like that is the way to do it. Because don't go swimming is funny enough in itself.
Well, it's full of anachronisms, isn't it? This film is full of modern speech and terminology. And yet again, it's not that you really notice it. It just seems natural.
Yeah.
With the style of the storytelling.
And that Billy Crystal and Carol Kane stuff, so much of that is ad-libbed. They worked on that for a while, and apparently, like, a lot of what Billy Crystal was ad-libbing, they just couldn't use because it was so blue. And they had to reshoot it so many times. Rob Reiner couldn't be on set because he was laughing too much, so he had to stand, like, really far away watching a monitor. Cary Elwes had to have his body replaced with a dummy for certain shots because he was laughing so much. And Mandy Patinkin's only injury on the whole movie was he bruised a rib trying to stop himself laughing at Billy Crystal in that scene. But it's so good. It's like, apparently he based part of his performance on a Mel Brooks character that Mel Brooks used to do, which I ended up watching on YouTube, called The 2,000-Year-Old Man. And a lot of it's a similar delivery. And Mel Brooks used to do perform it with Carl Reiner, Rob Reiner's dad. And Billy Crystal, when Rob Reiner was pitching him the role and was going, oh, this, Billy Crystal actually went, yeah, why don't you just get Mel Brooks to do this?
Yeah. It's weird. In my head, I've sort of remembered that Mel Brooks was in this film. But then when I watched it, I was like, oh, no, it's just Billy Crystal doing Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so good. The mutton, lettuce and tomato. An MLT, a mutton, lettuce and tomato.
Now, I'd forgotten that line. And did you read about there was a remake of The Princess Bride? Was like half threatened, but like not really. But there was an article in Variety or somewhere else talking about someone at the studio wanting to remake it. And like the internet goes bonkers, like saying this cannot happen, this can never happen. And Ted Cruz, you know the US Senator Ted Cruz? He tweeted about how he would, he loves nothing. He loves The Princess Bride. He would hate that. He loves The Princess Bride, but not as much as he loves a mutton, lettuce and tomato sandwich, and does the whole line about it being perky and stuff like that. And I read that before I watched this film, having forgotten that line. I was like, what the fuck is Ted Cruz talking about? Like, what's a mutton, lettuce and tomato sandwich? Who eats that? And then I thought, hey, hang on, Vicky. Don't waste any more of your precious time looking into this. Just watch the film and it will all make sense. And it did.
So I think you owe Ted Cruz an apology, which I wasn't expecting to say at the start of this podcast.
It was kind of inevitable. Yeah. Really weird. Something in my future for sure, but not today. Anyway, so then our heroes need to storm the wedding of Buttercup and Humperdinck. We now know Humperdinck is a proper baddie, where it's sort of not quite clear before, because he was going to murder her on their wedding night. And they storm the wedding together, that being Wesley, who's sort of coming back to life, but he's a little bit paralyzed still, and Inigo Montoya and Fezzik. And then this is a brilliant scene. The showdown between Christopher Guest and Mandy Patinkin, the sword fight. Like, did you think it was like actually quite chilling? Like, it's not just funny, but very moving and really impactful. Or is that just me?
So, I'll say this about that scene. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love it because it's where the movie isn't being arch and like self-aware. It's a proper fantasy scene where you believe, like, it's not about a kid being read a book. It's like this guy is getting his vengeance, and he plays it so seriously, and like his performance is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And where he goes, I want my father back.
And yeah.
Like, what?
It's no, he says, I want my father back, you son of a bitch, which yeah. really puts a button on it, doesn't it? It's
yeah, it's really good. Even just talking about it, like, honestly, this is good because I did have an authentic emotional response, so I'm not empty, and that's a relief.
You did, and I'm sure Mandy Patinkin's talked about the fact that he lost his father to cancer, and when he was playing these scenes, he was thinking about that and trying to fight the cancer.
And, oh, man, okay.
Which makes an already very moving sequence. I had me in bits this time.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? And like, it's really well paced, and he's repeating the same line, but he manages to do it with more and more conviction. It's it's really, really good. Mm. And then we have Buttercup's. Oh, I can't remember where we are in the scene, but the breast joke, bit of a weird joke. Wesley uses his cunning because he can't actually move to sort of convince Prince Humperdinck to sit the fuck down and not fight him, and that's the end of the film, basically. I want to talk about the emotional coda because this again brought a genuine tear to my eye. So we go back to Columbo and Kevin from the Wonder Years, and the whole the sort of emotional through line there is that at the start of the film, Fred Savage doesn't really want his granddad to come over and read to him. And he says to his mum, can you tell him, can you tell him I'm not in or something like that? Like, basically, I don't want to see him. And then by the end of the film, he says, granddad, maybe you could come over and read to me again. And I was like, oh, that is so beautiful.
And his granddad says, as you wish.
As you wish. Yeah. Shut up.
You've had really surprising that Columbo says fuck off to him at the end.
All right. Wait. We'll just take a quick break. We'll take a quick break there and we'll come back in a moment after these adverts.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We could call it Pete and Mark's Colossal Tussle.
But we didn't. We called it Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Peter.
A celebration of all things WrestleMania and beyond. And you may be thinking, I'm not really into wrestling. Well, don't worry. There's something for everyone. To be honest, it's mainly about stuff like this.
So hang on. Easy Lover was the original theme on WrestleMania.
It was. Someone heard it on the radio and went, that sums up everything about WrestleMania to me.
And this.
You can really see the old back acne on test.
Yes.
And this.
Is it worth reminding people of what earthquake John Tenta looked like at 23 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
And this.
For the record, Marty has made it very clear, and I agree and believe him, that he has never, A, had sex with his daughter, or B, wanted to have sex with his daughter.
And the people behind the face paint doing the most unique job in the entire world. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. That's Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
All right, go on, Victoria.
So that's my insight and deep analysis of the film. Is there any more for any more from either of you two on that one?
Well, concerning that ending as well, I do like the other callback, which I only noticed this time, was that Kevin from the Wonder Years does not like the kissing and complains about the kissing. And his granddad says, you know, you won't mind so much when you're older. And then at the end, he literally says, I don't mind so much. So it's not just when he's older. Half an hour later, he's already transformed and grown up before our eyes. But I really like it. I think it's a really clever callback.
Yeah, there was an alternate ending, which would have been a little bit like the Neverending Story, where he opens his bedroom window and he looks out and there's all of them on the horses, Fezzik and Inigo and Cary Elwes and Robin Wright are all on horses beckoning him to join their next adventure.
And doesn't he shout? He shouts Moonchild, doesn't he? Weirdly. Makes no sense. Have you seen the Deadpool 2 alternate cut, the Once Upon a Deadpool version?
Yes. So, no. Yeah, it's a bit of a soulless cash grab, that, though, because it is. I think a lot of people thought that was some sort of special movie, but it's just Deadpool 2. Mm. Is it Deadpool 2 or the first one?
Yeah, and it's framed with Deadpool telling Fred Savage the story. They recreated the bedroom from the Princess Bride, which is kind of cute, but as you say, it kind of undermines something that's very personal to people. So it's funny in a way that Deadpool does it, but it's hard. It's maybe a little bit sad as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny. But you can just watch those bits. I think they're somewhere on the internet now. I did think... no, I'm done with going through the film. If anyone else wants to jump in, I think you've talked about most of the stuff that I wanted to say, Victoria. So well done. I mean, well done.
Thank you.
I was looking around when I was researching it. Some of the Jason Reitman staged a couple of live readings of this, and I was looking at footage of one he did where he recasts films and does live readings, which are really good fun, but they tend not to be put online. He had Paul Rudd played Wesley, Mandy Calling played Buttercup, Patton Oswalt was Vicini, Kevin Pollock was Miracle Max, Goran Vizinich was Inigo Montoya. You know him? He's the hot dude that replaced George Clooney in ER.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Just say the hot dude who replaced George Clooney in ER.
Cary Elwes plays Humperdinck in this version.
That makes sense.
And Rob Reiner is the grandfather, and Fred Savage plays the grandson again.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
And there's little bits of it, like you've got them doing. You can catch online. Paul Rudd and Mandy Calling's doing the most passionate and most pure kiss ever. And there's also footage of Goran repeating the "You killed my father" line over and over again, which gets a big round of applause.
Oh, beautiful.
I mean, you didn't. The one thing you didn't mention, I guess, is the late great Peter Cook.
Oh, yeah.
And the wedding scene, just because marriage, so funny. Marriage is what brings us together today.
I mean, you know, when I watched this in whenever it would have been, about 1989, the thing I was most excited about was the fact that Mel Smith was in it.
Yeah,
he was a big hero of mine back then. And then I was trying to figure out, I would have vaguely known who Peter Cook and Billy Crystal were. Peter Cook did a lot of kid stuff in the 80s. But I don't think I was a fan of his yet. And I don't think Billy Crystal had really done much that I was interested in at that age. But Mel Smith was the one. And it is amazing when you look at all the brilliant comedians he cast in this. But I guess that's what comes from being Carl Reiner's son when you're directing it and knowing, would have known all these comedy guys growing up. So every 10 minutes, you've got a comedy genius showing up to do something funny. And even people that I wasn't aware of at all, like Wallace Shawn is so good in it at Vizzini as Vizzini, isn't he? Like, I could, even much as I love Danny DeVito, he would have done a good job, but this guy is just brilliant.
Mm. Wallace Shawn is fantastic, although apparently he had a really hard time because he thought Rob Reiner was going to fire him every day, and he went for dinner with Christopher Guest, and Christopher Guest tells a story about how Wallace Shawn was just kept going, this is awful, I'm going to get fired, Rob Reiner's going to get rid of me, and he says that he knew he was wrong for the part because for whatever reason, his agent told him that it had been offered to Danny DeVito and then to Richard Dreyfuss and that they both turned it down. And that's why they'd come to him. His agent said that to him. And so if before every single shot, he said he imagined how Danny would have played it so much better than he could. Oh. And he was haunted by that during the entire film. So if any agents are out there, he says, my advice is don't tell your client that he's the third choice for a role.
Yeah. Could you understand what Andre the Giant was saying?
I would say half and half, like
which is a problem.
Yeah,
but he was a French. He's a yes. French speaker.
Yeah, he is.
And
yeah.
So Rob Reiner recorded all his lines for him and put them on a cassette. And he used to walk around set with his headphones on, listening to the lines, and that's how he learnt the lines for the film.
Yeah, I'm saying it didn't work.
About half the time.
I mean, weirdly, it's not a problem. It doesn't seem to be a problem because what he's saying doesn't matter all the time because you're really just looking at this, you know, they called him the eighth wonder of the world. Like, it's as much about his size. And there are a couple of sweet moments where I found him intelligible, and he's got a couple of sweet moments with Inigo where the first time you realise that these guys are really maybe not the villains of the piece when Inigo's helping him, calming him down. He's an interesting chap, though, Andre the Giant. Have you seen the documentary about his life that came out a couple of years ago?
No, I know of the documentary, but I didn't really know who he is. Like, I was not a wrestling fan, so I know that he's a wrestler.
Yeah, he was the biggest star in wrestling before Hulk Hogan came along.
Okay.
And he's sort of bigger than any other wrestler, but he had a strange childhood in the French countryside. He was friends with Samuel Beckett when he was a kid.
Okay.
Samuel Beckett in the village had the only car without a roof that was big enough for him. So he would drive him to school, and apparently they would talk about cricket every day, which is just... and he's also known as the greatest drunk on earth. There are all these amazing stories about he once consumed 119 beers in 6 hours, 156 yes. in another sitting.
On the movie, Rob Reiner said that one morning he arrived on set not feeling well because he drunk 3 bottles of cognac and 12 bottles of wine the night before, and he'd said he got a little tipsy.
During the shooting of this, he supposedly fell on someone drunk. Carrie always says this in his book about the shooting of this movie. And they ended up having to send a policeman to follow him round to make sure he didn't fall on anyone else whenever he went drinking.
There's another story while they were shooting this where he got so drunk one night and he passed out in the lobby of the hotel they were staying at, and instead of waking him, and because they couldn't move him, the managers of the hotel placed a velvet rope around his body on the floor. And Kerry Ole said it was like looking at Gulliver's Travels.
And my favourite one is apparently prior to WrestleMania 3 he drank 14 bottles of wine. Vicky, could you do that? Could you do that?
I have.
You're allowed. That, yeah. You're allowed a bottle of WKD in between.
Just
them.
To break just, it up. I need one of those policemen to follow me around, stop me from falling over, try and preserve my dignity.
I think the only sad thing about this is a lot of his drinking was to numb the pain from all the back issues and physical ailments that he had from his sort of physical deformity, and also his, you know, his years in the wrestling ring being battered. So.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's the same. I get it.
Everyone talks about how he was like, he was such a lovely guy and like the heart of the set on this movie. Actually, Chris Sarandon tells a story about how when they heard he was working with an actual giant, his daughters wanted to come and visit the set. So he took them to the trailer to meet Andre, and they walked in. And They started screaming in fear at the top of their lungs and wouldn't stop until they were taken out. And Chris Sarandon said to Andre, I'm sorry, please forgive their behavior. And he said, no, either they come to me or they run from me.
Imagine having that effect on people. I mean, yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
I remember.
I don't know. That bloody picture you put up of you on Twitter between two Kurt Russells is terrifying. You look terrifying.
You were the one that asked for that picture.
I know,
not
but
a scary picture, like a normal picture.
It looks, it literally, if it had a caption, it would be, I will kill again.
I thought I looked hot. I was trying to look serious. Yeah, I was trying to look serious, like Big Kurt. I can't pull it off.
How is the beard, anyway? How's your beard coming along?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure about it now. There's so much white coming through.
Do you look like
it's just a bit messy. It's a bit messy now.
Has it got food in it? Is that what you mean?
I'm like one of the twits.
Oh, yuck. Get rid of it.
Ooh, all right. Any more for any more on the Princess Bride, or would you like to do the bits?
Do the bits,
I think. Should do the bits.
Yeah.
Great. Victoria, would you like to guide us
sure.
through the bits?
Chris, what was your best scene?
Well, I got goosebumps when Inigo addresses the six-fingered man. It's a nice reversal when he runs off. But when he keeps repeating that line and the son of a bitch moment, it's really emotional. You know, it's the beating heart of this film. The romance stuff, I don't quite buy as much as I do this. So, yeah, it just happened to be that scene.
Yeah, my best scene is that. I agree with you. Alex, what's your best scene?
The Battle of Wits with Vizzini.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the bit I remember most. Yeah, you know, I'm doing that thing now. I'm doing that thing when I approach these movies that I haven't seen for years. I try and think of the thing that I remember most from previous watches, like with Neverending Story, it was Artix. And with this, it was The Battle of Wits with Vizzini. And it really stands up. I love it. I love the whole conceit. And I love the brilliant line, one of my favourite lines in it, which is, you fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia.
So true.
Yeah, so that's mine.
What about your MVW, most valuable whatever, Chris?
Two mentions I'm going to do. I really like the rodent of unusual size. I'm sorry, Vicky.
That's okay.
I'm not picking that, but I just thought it was cool. And I really like Mark Knopfler's score. I think it's a really beautiful piece of music, and it works so lovely on top of this. But I'm going to go for, I'm not sure, Mandy Patinkin or Inigo Montoya, either one of the two. So I think it's, maybe it's Mandy Patinkin, because I'm not a fan of his normally. I don't really like him in anything else, but I absolutely love him in this film. And, you know, they could have and should have probably cast a Spanish actor. You know, you imagine Antonio Banderas playing that if it was a few years later, but they didn't. And this guy, you know, nailed it. I thought he's absolutely brilliant. And I would love to have seen more adventures of his character.
Yeah. Alex, what about you?
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today. I do love Peter Cook in that moment. But I'm with Chris. It's I didn't quite understand. Was Chris being intentionally meta there, where he was like, I can't decide between Mandy Patinkin or Inigo Montoya?
I think
because...
so. Yeah,
I don't know whether to pick the actor or the character, but...
What? I don't understand you sometimes. Yeah, it's Inigo Montoya's mine, I think. Is that right?
Not Mandy Patinkin.
But yeah, both of them. His performance as Inigo Montoya, I think they're the same thing. And yet now I'm questioning that, and I don't know why. Yeah, him, both of them. I love it. I think he's great. So yeah, them. The it. It?
Good.
What? That.
Good. Just to be different, picked him. I would have said that, but I'll say Mel Smith, because I would have liked to have seen more of him. Just the way that he uses his face, it makes me laugh. And I would have liked a bit more. So I'm going to pick him. And Chris, if you could make one change, what would you do?
Well, I mean, I thought it would have been good to give Christopher Guest something funny to do. He's got a couple of moments, but he's very serious in this. But really, the major problem I had with the film, and it was good. It was interesting seeing it through the eyes of my missus, who was watching it with me. Is give Princess Buttercup a bit more agency, some purpose, some strength. Georgina was getting so frustrated when stuff was happening and she wasn't stepping in to help her love or do anything. She's such a passive figure.
She does. She offers to marry Prince Humperdinck if he lets Wesley go and doesn't kill him.
But like, that's when the rodent of unusual size is there, she just kind of stands there watching it destroy the love of her life. And I wanted to get stuck in there. So
she's not Vicky. She's not going to jump in and like start smashing its face in with a brick.
All right, what I'm trying to say is I'd like Princess Buttercup to be more like Vicky.
Fantastic. Thanks, babe. And I hear you. And I'll just jump in here and say that's also my change. So fucking same, Chris. Yeah, she needs to be a bit more actively useful. She does literally stand there while he's getting bitten by this horrible rat thing and makes she's like, she goes a bit. Because at the start, she's quite feisty. Like, she's got some attitude on her. But she goes a bit Maid Marian in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where she just is, like, rendered useless once she's reunited with her life partner. So, yeah, I agree with you, Chris. And Alex, what change would you make?
Yeah, fuck it, that.
Really?
Of course not. I'm picking... so here's mine. I thought it was going to be this, and then it wasn't this, and then I thought my version was better, but I haven't really thought it through, so I might be wrong. But you know the bit in my favourite scene where he has the Battle of Wits with Vizzini, and he has the poison that he puts in both the glasses of wine. But first, he gives it to Vizzini, and he goes, here, smell this. And he goes, I smell nothing. And then he takes it back and he goes, it's poison. And puts it in both glasses. And then they have to guess which glass. And in the end, Vizzini drinks the glass and dies. And it's revealed that I built up an immunity to that poison. And that's why he didn't get poisoned, even though he put it in both glasses of wine. I think it might be better if when he gives it to him and Vizzini sniffs it, at that point he'd sniffed the poison and there was no poison in the wine and he was dead from that moment onwards and it's all just a matter of time, like Cary Elwes is waiting for him to just die.
Oh, okay. It's a long-winded way to get there, but that is funny.
We'll have that. In the end, it's quicker, but yeah, it works.
It's good.
Yes.
It's good. No, it's good.
But also, just more agency for Princess Buttercup. Yeah,
yeah, well done. Right on.
Yeah, well done, sister. You smashed
it. Chris, are you looking to borrow some money from Vicky or something? I honestly couldn't work what was going on there. I couldn't work it out.
I didn't think money was going to exchange hands.
Again.
Again.
Your Honour.
I'm all in. I'm all in, Vicky. I'm all in.
It's not retracting. Right. Shall we do the verdict?
Yes.
Do it.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Great. So it is The Neverending Story versus The Princess Bride. Which movie is winning this Clash of the Titles? Which are we declaring the better film? Vicky, who would you like to start, seeing as you picked it was your movie? Actually, no, I picked these movies. I'll ask you guys. Victoria, what are you picking?
Well,
what's going to be your winner?
I am going to say it was a little bit difficult because I have a lot of love for Neverending Story, for remembering it and watching it 1,000 times. And then watching The Princess Bride, it made me laugh more. It wasn't traumatizing in the same way. So it wasn't an easy choice. But because it is lean, it moves along really efficiently. There's not as many children in it, so it's a bit of an unfair fight, but that's always going to make it better. It's The Princess Bride.
Okie dokie. The Princess Bride has one vote. Christopher Tilley.
I mean, I like the way The Princess Bride pretty much creates that Pixar template of jokes for kids and adults and making it a film that kind of changes as you grow in age. You see it in a different ways. But I also love the craft and the beauty in the models and the creatures in Neverending Story. And... you know, what I was saying about it having this depth that I didn't really understand when I watched it as a kid, that it's remarkable to have this film about grief and depression and bereavement, hidden away in a fantasy story. And that message with Artax, that scene, you know, it's don't surrender to your sadness. It's the message to Bastion. And I think it's a really powerful one. So with this one, my head says Princess Bride, but my heart says Neverending Story, because what it's meant to me in my life, in my childhood, and therefore I'm going to go with my heart, Neverending Story.
Ooh, one each. Victoria, I can hear your children in the background. Are they getting excited about the verdict?
Can you hear that? Bloody hell, it's a good microphone. Yeah.
It was amazing. They sort of were being louder then, sort of as Chris went on. In my head, at least, they became fascinated by what he was saying. Who is?
I get that a lot.
Who is this man?
I get that a lot.
Speaking these truths. Right. Well, it's down to me then, which is nice, seeing as I pick these movies. And I agree, it's a tough one. It really is a tough one. I love both these films, but both do have problems for me. The Princess Bride is just a bit too knowing for me, which is a personal thing for sure. But I like to get totally lost in a fantasy film, and the Princess Bride's self-awareness just keeps dragging me out of Florin and into the real world. And I the characters aren't real. You know, they are just characters in a story. And they never cross over into the real world, like in the Neverending Story. So I'm not that emotionally invested in their fates, because it's reinforced that they're fictitious, especially without the alternative ending where they turn up in the real world. The Neverending Story, on the other hand, has characters that are real and whose fates do resonate with me emotionally, especially Artax. I'm invested in what happens to them, but the end is really rushed. I find the end just, it's like I'm sort of, it really upset me how clipped that ending is. But and it's not the winner I was gonna pick before we watch these movies. I am going for the Neverending Story.
Wow.
As the winner.
Wow.
Over the Princess Bride.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I walked into this episode thinking I was going to be picking The Princess Bride, but the Neverending Story, it's just, I mean, largely Artax, but other bits in it, it really got to me. It got under my skin, and it wasn't, I know what The Princess Bride is, and it's a different kind of film and stuff, but I was just so sort of like, it's self-awareness. I couldn't get past that and get involved, which is what personally I look for in a movie like this.
That's a good answer, Alex. That's one of your best answers.
Everyone's having a good Chris. Day.
Oh, we are, aren't we? Brilliant. Well, it's been a pleasure going on this journey with all of you. The winner this week is The Neverending Story. I kind of feel, I don't know what you guys think, that might come back to bite us. There is a lot of love out there for The Princess Bride. I think we might get called out on this one, but The Neverending Story is the winner.
You've got to go with your heart.
I've gone with my heart. You are picking next week's films. Do you want to give us the clue again that you gave us at the end of the last episode?
Yeah. So, and I can give you a bit more of a clue. So I gave you the clue Frozen Assets, and you together came up with The Cutting Edge versus Blades of Glory, which is a very good guess, but it's not the correct guess because it's not Frozen Assets. I'll tell you one more thing. They're both movies from the early 1990s. Would you like another guess before I reveal?
Frozen Assets.
Frozen Assets. Frozen Assets. Is it Cool Runnings versus something else?
No.
No, I can't.
Alex, have you got anything?
Well, I'm sort of looking at, I'm trying to work it out literally, like Frozen Assets, as in it's a movie about finance. And then I just thought.
Yeah, I thought that. But then I didn't think that you would pick that.
No, I don't know, Christopher. Okay. I really don't know.
Okay, we'll go with the second film first. Vicky, you are getting the 1993 Sandra Bullock vehicle Demolition Man.
Alex,
and I picked Demolition Man because that's been in the news recently, so that's something we'll be able to talk about. Alex, I'm giving you the 1992 film Universal Soldier.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Vicky, she gets the better movie. No, actually, that's interesting. I haven't seen Universal. I've watched Demolition Man a lot. I haven't seen Universal Soldier since I first watched it a very long time ago. Okay.
Well, I'll let you. You could flip them when you're off air, but I just thought I would give Vicky the Sandra Bullock one.
That's the correct thing to do.
Exactly. Seriously, you've got to give the best member of the team what they want.
Rodman.
Starting to sound bitter. Stop it.
You've got to give Rodman the ball.
Oh, I'm so delighted. Still, please.
Lovely. So that is us done. We are doing Demolition Man and Universal Soldier next week. Get your homework done. In the meantime, if you want to hit us up about the Neverending Story versus The Princess Bride and complain about that result, you can on Twitter at ClashPod or email us show@clashpod.com. If you do also want to send Chris and I an email citing either of us as the best member of the team, that'd be great too. Just a bit of balance, you know, parity, love that. And also subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Can I say one more thing about those emails and messages though? We do at this point know that I'm all in is referencing the fact that he's tired, so you don't need to tell us that anymore.
Okay, yeah.
I accept it. I'll accept anything if someone else apart from you two tells me that's the basic rule.
Biggie's finally come around to the idea that men cannot retract their penises inside their body. It's been a real learning curve this week on the show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a week. Bye-bye. No, in a few days. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.